It is indeed time for Language Lab. In previous episodes of Language Lab, we've said that all language is good language and that language is always changing. There's basically nothing we can do about it. Language is always evolving. However, I have sometimes heard older people complain about the way young people use language. My pop's always complaining that newfangled words are happening and he has no idea what they mean or why words have been repurposed in the way that they have or changed, shaping or moving through different definitions. With all of us young'uns, with all the cousins. Today we're going to chat about youth language with Dr. Celeste Rodriguez-Luro, who's the Director of Language Lab at UWA, and we borrow her for our own Language Lab here at RTR FM. Good morning, Dr. Celeste.
Good morning, Pam. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's a little rainy outside, but, you know, it's nice to be indoors, nice to be cosy. Are you staying warm and comfy?
I am. It's if I don't, I can't actually think properly.
So. Oh, it's terrifying, isn't it? You just feel paralysed by all the cold. All right,
yes.
So we're not paralysed because we're obviously chatty. We're chatty gals. We love a chat.
We love a chat.
And today we're talking about young people and language. Now, I know that I myself definitely take on strange new definitions, and you're always trying to evolve with what all the new ways of using certain words are, or even the invention of new words. But as I said, young people do get a bit of a bad rap sometimes with an older crowd about language. Why do young people get such bad press when it comes to language?
Yeah, they definitely do. I just wanted to say before we get started today that today has been or will be Bill Pittman's last episode that she has helped produce for us.
Oh, thanks, Billy Pittman. She's a star. Yay. She helps produce the episodes every week from all the way at UWA. She's a star. So, you know, a collective round of applause out to Billy Pittman.
Yes, thank you, Billy, for everything you've done. And we're now recruiting new interns for semester two, so stay tuned. But let's get back to your question. Why do young people get such bad press when it comes to language changing? So a senior sociolinguist I work with usually says something that I love. She says younger people are the movers and shakers of linguistic change. They lead in the adoption of new ways of using language, and these new ways of using language range from new ways to pronounce sounds, to new grammatical structures, to words, and to the meaning of words, which is what you were referring to before. So what we know is that there's obviously a gap between different generations, and this gap makes it possible for younger generations to depart from established linguistic traditions and from what is considered normal for people. So this is a given. Every generation will modify language to some extent, will speak slightly differently to the previous generation. And something of note is that in general, older people will be okay with technological change and other types of change as long as they make life simpler. But when it comes to language, it's a completely different story. So older folks will tend to complain about language changing. And this is not just anecdotal. It's not something that we've heard, a one-off scenario. This is actually quite systematic. It's actually patterned and systematic to the extent that in industrialized Western urban societies, there's something known as a golden age principle in linguistics, a golden age principle, which is basically the belief that sometime in the past, language existed in a state of perfection.
A state of perfection? I mean, we're going by that practice here of all language is good language, but perfection,
exactly.
Celeste?
Exactly. Well, you see, you got it. You got exactly to the point that I'm going to make now, which is that if we ask ourselves at what point was language ever perfect, the answer is it's always been perfect because language is always perfectly suited for our needs, which goes back to what we were saying last week, that all language is good language.
It's the ethos here.
Yes, exactly. But this is what's interesting, that every single time older folks will tend to think that the way they spoke language when they were young was better, or that the way that youth nowadays are ruining language, are corrupting language, and so that's known as the golden age principle.
Aha. How does language actually change? How are these changes happening from generation to generation?
Yeah. So language changes because generations of speakers slightly modify the way their predecessors were using language. It's a little bit tricky, unfortunately, because in linguistics, most of the theorizing around language change kind of assumes a monolingual person, that is a person who commands a single variety, a single linguistic variety. And it also assumes a person who is exposed to a single language and a single dialect, which we know is not the case because most of the world is multilingual. But assuming that this is the case, and that we have this monolingual speaker of English that is exposed to monolingual English, the way that language changes is that each generation will modify how the previous generation was using language. And what's really interesting is that some linguistic changes will go completely under the radar. So people will not notice that this new generation is using language differently. Sometimes, however, language change comes from above the level of consciousness, and that is when you hear people complain about it and talk about it.
It's pretty interesting to think about how we might have complaints about language, or you hear it and you might think, oh, I don't like the way that that sounds, or why has that changed? But what kinds of language changes are we witnessing? Are there?
Yeah, so language change really affects the entirety of language. And so it's sounds, it's grammatical structure, it is words, it is word meaning. So I wanted to share with you some examples. I know you love a good example, Pam, so I will share a few of these. So there's a sound change in Australian English as used in Melbourne, around Melbourne, whereby the name of the city of Melbourne is actually pronounced more like Malbon if you are from Melbourne. So there's this vowel change, and it acts both as a sign that language is changing, but also it allows people to kind of use it as a kind of badge. There's a pronunciation that obviously if someone says Melbourne, you know that they're from Melbourne. So it's a very cool one. Another one that I wanted to share with you is a grammatical change. And this is a process known in linguistics as grammaticalization. It's a really, really cool kind of process which allows a word to take on some grammatical meaning. So this word is from Old English. It's a word that we may pronounce today as willin, so W-I-L-L-A-N, Old English, used to mean to want, to wish. And with the passing of time, it actually turned into something we use a lot. So willin gave rise to will, which is a way to encode future. Yeah, something we're going to be doing in the future. And so these kinds of changes, grammatical changes, are very common, whereby a word gives rise to this grammatical element that we use a lot. And then I have a third example, which is my personal favorite because I've done quite a lot of research on it, which is like.
Aha. We've visited this area before. It's a personal hated word in my vocabulary of my parents. They just want me to stop saying it. But it's really interesting because it is a bit of a phenomenon, right? We use it a lot.
It is an absolute phenomenon. So I'll tell you, there are two things that I think are sort of the most important ones about this. Well, one is that your parents are evidencing really in their complaint, that's the golden age principle. So that's one. You can tell them that. Maybe they find it interesting.
They'll be yelling at me after the show. Why did you bring us up again?
Oh, no, I think it's lovely. Hi, Pam's parents. You know, it's lovely because that way we can understand things. So so two things about like. One is that like, as a discourse marker and so on, has been around the English language for a very long time. So when people say, young people using like, well, like has been around for at least 800 years. So there's a lot of time that people have been using like as a discourse marker. The one that people also complain about is a new one called a quotative, which is the one we use to introduce what someone said or thought and so on, especially when we're storytelling. So you might say something like, I was like, this is my favorite radio show. And that encodes something that you thought or something that you said to someone. In the past, people would say, I said, this is my favorite radio show, or I thought, this is my favorite radio show. But this new quotative has taken on, has taken the world by storm, and has also really been adopted across different varieties of English, including Aboriginal English, which is our latest paper and like. So very, very exciting. And the last type of change I wanted to very quickly mention is semantic change. And this is one where perhaps that's what you're referring to at the very beginning. And one really cool example of this is the word meat. So the word that we now use to refer to animal flesh. To begin with, meat, the word meat in the English language actually meant food. And due to what we know in linguistics as semantic narrowing, it ended up meaning what it means today, animal flesh. Did you know that? That's pretty cool.
Meat, I didn't know that. Food.
Oh, yes, there you exactly. go. Yeah.
It's pretty scary to think about the way that those languages change, but it's really exciting to watch them come into fruition or be able to look back into history or into your own life and realize that those words have changed. Now, other than like, which I think could be considered as something that, you know, gets associated with young people, what are some examples of language used by youth or young people that older people complain about?
Yeah, so lately there's been a lot of discussion around swearing, and especially the F word, which, as you can tell, I'm not young enough to be able to just say it comfortably on air, but other people would just say it. And I was quite struck by this because I was attending a panel last year. It was quite academic. You know, it was an academic sort of event, and the language, I would have expected the language to be relatively formal. And for the older speakers on the panel, it was definitely the case. For the younger speakers, I noticed they were swearing a lot, specifically using the F word. And I thought, wow, something's changing here. And then there was a whole thing online about that, you know, the fact that younger people and women in particular are very comfortable, younger women, using the F word, and that's another kind of language change. So, you know, the contexts, I guess, it would be an expansion in the contexts that you are able to swear without sort of suffering negative consequences from doing so. So that would be a pragmatic change. Sometimes it's other things, you know, sort of like, older people complaining that younger people should use may instead of can when you're asking for permission and things like that. So there's several different aspects of language that older people might pick on. Yeah.
It is interesting to think about. I used to have a computer teacher at school that would not let us leave the classroom unless we said, may I, not can I. And he would say, of course you can. And we'd have to go, oh, no, may I leave. But it is, you know, wonderful to think about these different definitions and different changes that we do have. How has social media impacted the way language changes?
Yeah, social media is a rich source of linguistic input. People use social media a lot. And so it really acts as a massive spreader of linguistic innovation. I would say that social media platforms are a bit like a community of practice where you get sort of like-minded people coming together. Although, of course, you know, not everyone you're friends with on social media is like-minded, but, you know, there's some degree of commonality. And so a lot of the times there's this new jargon arising out of social media and around the internet, and the jargon spreads very quickly online. Some examples of these are what we know as text speech or emoji use, the use of abbreviations, and you know, specific examples like terms that we use a lot now, like FOMO, fear of missing out. And of course, LOL, which doesn't require an explanation. But the cool thing about this is that once a term sort of catches on social media or on the internet, then it jumps out of that and it makes it into spoken interaction. And so we can now say things like, that movie was hilarious, how I lolled. And, you know, that's a term that's originally made sense only online, but has now kind of jumped out of the internet into our daily lives.
It is wonderful to see all of them jump out, right? And you sometimes feel yourself using them. Sometimes I cringe when I hear myself use a word outside of its regular text context, but eventually it does just weave its way into our regular vernacular. And it is wonderful to sort of witness those changes, even if they do make you feel a bit odd. Sometimes change is uncomfortable, but, you know, mostly it's pretty exciting. Thank you so much for joining us on the record for Language Lab, Celeste. Always interesting, always full of facts. It's always great.
Lovely. Speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.
Bye, Celeste.